everyone, it's Travis.
And I'm Ryan.
And we are here after a few weeks off to kick off another episode.
Yes, indeed.
For your listening pleasure and edification.
Always for your edification.
Mainly for your enjoyment, your edification, because we can. Yes. Because we care. I don't know where else to go with that, so yeah. We'll just roll right into it. Do we really care? How much do we care?
I think we care.
Do we care?
We must care. We care about our audience. I think we have to start off with this. I think we have to start off with... I won't call it what I called him before we started this podcast. That's probably a little too mean. But I don't know if you heard about the story of the pastor in Missouri. He's with the General Baptist, I think, denomination.
Never heard of the General Baptist until this guy.
I think I have.
Have you?
I think I have.
I mean, part of it's hard. There's so many Baptists.
Yeah, there are. There are a lot of Baptists. But, you know, this guy decided to do this message. And this is not his first message on this topic, but to talk about how women need to, especially like wives, need to take care of themselves physically.
Right. Stay fit.
Yes. And he was, you know, basically...
Happy Women's Day, by the way.
Happy...
We're here to celebrate Women's Week, International Women's Day. And this guy chose that week to drop this knowledge.
Yes. And he basically was rebuking women for letting themselves go. And, you know, he used Melania Trump as an example of, you know, this is the trophy wife.
Yeah.
He's like... He said, but he did say, you don't have to be... up to this low, you could be at least a participation trophy. And even mentions that his, you know, he has a friend who had given his wife a divorce weight.
A divorce weight?
Yeah, so if she reaches that certain weight, he's going to divorce her. And let me just tell you about this guy.
I feel like I know so much already.
Well, let me just... Let me just tell you that this guy is
I feel like I know his name, his nicknames.
Let's just say if I'm his friend, I'm going to tell him, hey, bro, maybe you should get in the gym a little bit. Maybe you should stop doing the donut curls and do the actual weight curls.
I always find it interesting that a lot of times these gentlemen who feel the need to make these kind of statements, oftentimes themselves are not rocking it hard, you know, as far as the old, like, physical, shaping
so
thing.
Just kind of picture, like, what you would think a typical pastor would look like.
From Missouri.
That's going to be
a little stereotypical, but...
But let's say if he was a woman with his body, you'd probably say, when is the baby due?
On a range from John Belushi to John Candy...
He's not quite to John Candy yet, but he's in the Belushi range.
Oh my goodness!
Not Belushi, definitely not Jim Belushi. Actually, looks pretty good now, but yeah, it's definitely in that range of.
Obviously we kid here a little bit. It's really because what an ignorantly stupid thing for someone to say.
It's ignorantly stupid for somebody to say in general. It's really bad to do it from a pulpit.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like
I do want to kind of, on one hand, there's a part of me that wants to team him up with that other Baptist from, I believe it's Indiana, who believes that women should go skiing in their dresses.
Yes.
I kind of want to see those two guys sit down. Honestly, because here's why. You remember Total Recall?
Yes.
Did you ever watch that back in the 80s? You remember when he sits in the chair and he's kind of getting the IVs and they're getting him prepped for Mars transport or whatever, and then he gets to design his perfect lady?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like... And I feel like these guys would think they're Schwarzenegger in their looks and their demeanor, but it would be more like Peter Griffin.
Or Homer. I think him and Homer actually, they have similar body types, you know, if I'm going to picture that.
Yeah, that's...
Well, I think what needs to stop is the whole pastors getting on stage, no matter what you look like as a pastor, what your body type is, stop saying, my smoking hot wife. Why are we doing this?
Have you ever watched Veep?
I've watched a little bit. I haven't watched like all of it, so... I'm probably not going to get the reference. So I think
you're probably not, so I won't go too far into it, except to say that there is a character who is just the... he is supposed to be the portrayal of kind of just guys who are like that, right? Like, everything's very stereotypically driven, and he does get married, and he introduces, as he's campaigning for the presidency, he introduces every single time, it's my smoking hot wife. And it's like, so it just makes me laugh. Like, it is actually, like, both a thing that happens, but it also happens in parody simply because it happens so much in real life.
Well, I think it's kind of ridiculous because you didn't... I mean, if you married your wife because you just thought she was smoking hot and that's all you married her for, there's probably going to be some problems there, but...
not as long as she keeps to the agreements.
True. Don't get to the divorce weight. That's right. Ladies, do not get to the divorce weight if you're listening.
As long as she's keeping up her push-ups and, you know...
Yes. You know, not eating like one piece of lettuce per meal. And that's it. You know, that's all we can... That's all you can really do. But what's ridiculous is, like, you're objectifying your wife who is there to...
For everyone else. Like, for everyone on behalf else. Of everyone else, let me objectify you some more.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is bonkers. I'm going to be convinced that he will be resigning soon if he has not already been booted. I think I heard that he was, like, kind of like on suspension while the elder board figured their
nonsense out. I think he went into like some kind of counseling.
There was a counseling part. Yeah, counseling. There's always a counseling part.
Yeah. But this is not his first time. He did a Mother's Day message that was very similar.
I mean, how many times did Mark Driscoll go seek spiritual rehab?
Yeah.
You know, after saying just something boneheaded.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, again, that's like, you know, there's a place for counseling. So I'm for the counseling and the therapy. But then there's a part where I feel like, you know, there's a lot of pastors that kind of use it as their get out of jail free, right? Like, they say something ridiculous, they say something stupid, and then they go like, "Well, I'm going to go seek counseling. I'm going
to
go seek.
I'm
going to go seek restoration."
Yes,
you know, I'm entering a restoration process.
I have sought counseling, and I am all the better for it.
That's right.
And now
then they go out and they just say something boneheaded about something else.
Yeah, so. Like let's just go. I'm going to say something else really, really stupid.
Right.
And then it's like, okay, if you, I don't know, like one of those situations, like, I don't know about you, but a situation like that, if it's in our denomination, like the denomination I'm part of, if somebody said that, like one of our pastors said that, I'd probably be like calling executive council and saying, we can't let that go.
Like, no,
he has to be removed.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, this is one of those things where sometimes there's so many Baptist denominations, there's so many denominations in general that, you know, it makes me wonder, like, what kind of leadership structure. I'll have to go do a little digging. Because, like, now I'm curious. Like, just my church nerd comes out and goes, what is their structure of their denomination? Who is he accountable to? Because the downside to some of those Baptist groups, you know, is that they just basically exist as independent bodies.
They're autonomous.
Yeah, right.
They do whatever they want.
You know, like, they're all, like, they'll be fellowship together, or they'll all kind of, you know, share in some kind of greater thing. But then, frankly, they all just basically do what they want, and they're like, you know, no one actually can hold him to anything or hold the body to anything. So
no.
I'll have to go do a little peeking around and see what they're up to. But
I mean, in our church, like, everybody's answerable to the elder board, which should include me too. You know,
yeah.
if I said something like that, my goodness, my elders would be all over me and just be, they'd probably remove me. And they said, that's unacceptable.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty, I mean, to me, it's like, it's an interesting thing, right? Because on one hand, you know, it has to do with the influence in the position that you're in, right? It's not that it was just so outrageous. I mean, although it was pretty dang outrageous, right? But it's, I think, more to do with the fact of, you know, when you serve in that position of leadership, when your position as a pastor is about, you know, edification, empowerment, you know, building up the body, to just have that kind of ignorant statement of, like, here's what we believe women need to be doing.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just like, you know, that's where I would just be like, well, if you can't get that right, I kind of question everything else. He probably believes in the rapture too, so, you know.
Probably. Well, the sad part was, when you hear the clip of him talking, you hear people laughing in the audience. And it's like, see, that's...
And is it just getting more and more awkward as it goes on? Yeah. Like, The cringe laughter?
Yeah. You get the guys that laugh out loud right away, and then their wives are like, I will kill you. Like, you laugh again.
Keep laughing. And it will be the last sound you make.
And I will cut you.
Yeah.
I will pull out the knife now.
That's a boneheaded one.
And
a moron.
I think he's going to say, speaking of objectifying women, we got to talk about one of our favorites. Mrs. Beth Moore.
Ah, I thought you were going to bring something.
No.
I was like, what?
No. And so I was. So if you haven't heard, Beth Moore has finally cut ties with the Southern Baptist Association, which is a huge, huge announcement because she. And she is like Lifeway is no longer going to distribute her books and materials and Bible studies and I think that was
so they're not even going to carry her previous stuff.
They will carry her previous stuff, but they're not going to carry.
But they're not going to be the publisher for her new stuff.
They're not going to Yeah, that's it. They're not going to publish her new stuff. They will still carry her.
Yeah, but I'd be surprised. I mean, I knew she was moving on from Lifeway as part of that. I would be surprised if they didn't carry it.
They're going to carry it, but they're not going to publish any of her new stuff.
Right. So she'll probably go to some new publisher.
Yeah. So. And
I wonder where she'll end up. I wonder if she'll end up like at Varsity Press or something like that.
I'm sure somebody will, you know. But I was reading. So if you haven't really followed the story of Beth Moore, Beth Moore has been a very, very outspoken since the beginning when Donald Trump took over presidency in 2016. She was not happy with his character, his, you know, some of the statements that he was caught on tape saying about women and things like that. And she got blasted for it.
Yep.
And she was not trying to, and she's always been accused in the Southern Baptists of trying to be a preacher. And she has always said, I am not.
Right.
I am a teacher. I teach women's Bible studies. And sometimes men take those Bible studies. I do not force myself upon men. And in those situations, she has always been an example of humility and just surrendering to any kind of authority that was over her. Yep. And she'd just be like, no, that's not what I'm trying to do. And people have always tried to accuse her. So when the Trump stuff happened, she got blasted for it. But she didn't back down. She just kept saying, like, this is not, if we're going to follow Christ, this is not a Christian example. Like, guys, we're going down a... She's basically saying, we're going down a dangerous road here, a slippery slope. And so she was just... I mean, she... I would follow her for a while, and she would talk about stories of how she was treated, even in the Southern Baptist. Like, and when I was talking about objectifying women, she was saying, like... She tweeted this story the other day about... she met this... You know, she didn't say his name, but she met this well-known, like, pastor, teacher... author within the Southern Baptist, and she was excited to meet him because she's read his books and all this stuff. And when she met him, he looked her up and down and said, oh, I thought you'd be prettier.
Wow.
Or no, he said, you're prettier than the another one, uh-huh. another female uh-huh. speaker. That was it.
Jeez. Either way, there's really no winning.
Either way, he said it, but it was the second way he said it. I'm like, what? Like,
yeah.
No. And she was just obviously just taken aback by that and this and that. So she has finally just got sick of it. And, you know, there's been other obviously vocal supporters of her. Russell Moore, part of the Ethics Commission in the Southern Baptist, has always been a vocal supporter of her and said, you know, she's right. We need to listen to her. But, yeah, she has cut ties.
Good for her.
With the Southern Baptist. And
Good for her. More power to her.
I am... glad she's doing it. I think it's interesting because you've seen these. I was praying even last year and the year before. I was like, God, just do something in your church, even if you have to tear us down.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to see that. Like, God is tearing down some things. Some long-held,
I mean, the Southern Baptists have kind of dominated a certain aspect of the evangelical world for several decades now, right? So... there's a part of this that goes, and I have no ill will towards the Southern Baptists.
No. As I grew up Southern Baptist.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I've spent a lot of time working in with those kind of organizations, working with a lot of networks and connections in there. I've got a lot of friends in the Southern Baptist, so I have no ill will towards them. But there's a part where you go, they've spent decades kind of establishing a certain culture, a certain way of doing things. It is what kind of led to where, you know, a lot of the challenges that people of faith in their... you know, how do I practice faith? Where do I stand politically? Where do I stand socially on some things? Like, a lot of that, whether they realize it or not, is heavily influenced through the Southern Baptists, simply because the Southern Baptists were one of the first, you know, to really create a machine out of their denomination, right? Like, they spawned Lifeway out of that. Mm-hmm. They have, you know, a huge, I mean, for years, I mean, you had all the music that came out of the Southern Baptist churches. You had a lot of the prominent leaders came out of the Southern Baptist churches. You know, so you had this whole, like, you know, they were this very, very powerful, influential group. And it was kind of like, you had the Southern Baptists over here, and then the other people were kind of the televangelists, you know, name it, claim it, you know. And so it was sort of like, well, if you're not over here with kind of the crazy folks, you probably are with the Southern Baptists. And so I think a lot of people just, again, whether they realize it or not, aligned with a lot of that thinking. So, you know, where the Southern Baptists have been now, I mean, we've talked about this before, just some of their issues with race, some of their issues with how they treat Southern Baptist churches that are primarily made up of people of color, right? Yeah. Where you got a lot of African American, you know, ministers and gospel churches and stuff. So that's, I mean, I hope it's a good learning experience for them. I hope it's an opportunity for them to kind of make some really good evaluations and call some things into check. I am excited about their newest announcement for Beth Moore's replacement. Paula White will be stepping... No, I'm joking.
I'm done.
They're like, we've let go of Beth Moore. She's cut ties, but we are happy to announce our new teacher of women, Paula White. That would be hilarious.
No, is she good? If Paula White's going to take it, is she going to release like a remix of her Calling Angels from Africa?
I don't know. Yeah, I wonder what Paula does now that, you know, she's not advising presidents.
I try to keep up with old Robert Jeffers too to see what
amazingly enough, a lot of these people have just gone silent.
They have.
The minute they lost their place in the spotlight, man, they just... It wasn't like a nice half step back into where they were. It's like just radio silent. Like, and that was the last thing we ever heard from them. I'm waiting. I, you know, listen, I'm at the point now where I sit and every night I kind of check before I go to bed. I kind of roll through my YouTube feed because I have a few things that I follow and I look for. And I kind of just like to, it's part of the rhythm of my getting ready, you know, to end the day, right? It's like, okay, I'm going to go watch this channel. I'm going to go follow this YouTuber. I'm going to go listen to this. And I have to admit, I sit there every time waiting and hoping that someone will release either an actual or even a remixed new Kenneth Copeland video.
Oh.
Because he has also gone radio silent following both the second decimation of COVID and then set, you know, his prayer time for the president. But nothing beats Paula. Nothing beats Paula and her prayerathon, with all the... with all the international angels invited to attend.
Yes.
Those folks have just gone completely off the grid.
You'll see some pop up here and there, and they say, like, you know, in heaven, Donald Trump is still president.
So what I've found is folks who are, you know, kind of into that Donald Trump's presidency shall never end group, I believe that they, I've decided that to some degree that they, you know, even in their Christianity, even in their faith, they don't realize how close they are to Jehovah's Witnesses, who think that the kingdom of God has come and has been here since 1914.
Yes.
It's just invisible because we didn't get, like, regardless of the fact that, yes, we sold all of our possessions, went and gathered on this mountain and waited, and then nothing happened, and the next day came, and literally, it's the same thing, right? Like, oh, it was an invisible presidency. It's an invisible kingdom. And I'm like, no, you know how silly people sound.
Yeah.
Just go ahead and say no. It's done and over and move on with your life.
I like that.
It's the only reason why I can't take Jehovah's Witnesses seriously, like, as far as, you know, not as people. I have no problem with them as people. But, like, as a group of philosophy of faith, I'm like, as soon as I hit the part where I'm like, so wait a minute. You're telling me Jesus came back in 1914, or maybe it was 1904. I can't remember. Somewhere right in the early 1900s. It was like right in that spot where they all sold everything they had because, again, one of their Bible code numbers people, I believe, had prophesied that this was going to be the day and the time, and then it didn't happen. They didn't get vamoosed off to wherever they were going to get sucked up into, and they all looked around at each other and said, well, it must have happened invisibly. And I just go, like, I'm out.
I like the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. They say that Joseph Smith got this revelation from Golden in the forest of New York and from the angel Moroni.
Yes, and, yes, moron with an eye.
Yes, moron with an eye. And, you know, these golden plates with this new translation.
In Reformed Egyptian. Which you need glasses to interpret.
Which all scholars, all linguistic scholars everywhere will say there is no such thing as Reformed Egyptian. And no one ever saw those golden plates except for Joseph Smith.
Well, they didn't have the golden glasses. Remember, you needed the golden spectacles because that was what allowed him to read if he took the spectacles off, he couldn't read it either. Oh, yeah. There's a whole thing. But, you know, here's the problem. Here's the problem I have into that. I have less issue with Latter-day Saints as they stand today.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, you know, let's be frank, there's probably a lot of denominations and movements that started with some kook, you know, that basically was just, you know, either in it to scam people or in it to get some fame or some notoriety. But they have basically embraced at least a fairly close evangelical posture. There are definitely some issues in their theology here and there that we would all still struggle with, right? Like even just, you know, how they view Christ himself, right? Mm-hmm. Christ as an angel is always going to be a little bit of a... If you don't have the incarnation, then you don't quite have mm-hmm. what Jesus himself said he came to do. But they at least kind of like, beyond a couple of these little issues, which are frankly major issues, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
At least in posture and in relationship, I can deal with that. And so I have like a lot of folks that I've worked with have been part of, you know, either Mormon churches or you know, some form of Latter-day Saints. I do think it does also matter whether you are in that group that followed Brigham Young or in the group that stayed true to Smith. Because they did have one of those kind of like fracturings where like, hey, this is a little getting out there, and they kind of had that turn. So I think if you're like a Brigham Young Mormon, I do believe you kind of have a little bit more balance, because a lot of those folks reject a lot of the mm-hmm. Smith nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
But JWs don't have that moment. They have a bit of a kook story. And like their origin story is made up of a little bit of a Mad Hatter mm-hmm. who comes up a lot of crazy and then culminates in the selling of the everything and then the invisible kingdom that they continue to push as... You know, mm-hmm. as fact up to this day. So it's almost like, you know, at least the Latter-day Saints have had that moment of like, some of this stuff was probably not mm-hmm. born out of accurate understanding or maybe not the best best way of framing it. But yeah, I mean, we'll have to do an episode on some interesting denomination origin stories.
Yeah.
There's so many denominations, and you know there's some really excellent origin stories that would just make you sit there and go like, what?
Yeah.
So we'll have to do some digging on that one.
We will have to do some digging. That'll be fun. But, yeah, I mean...
Especially when it comes to the Baptists, who, in my opinion, are basically the multiverse of Christianity.
It's true.
Because it's like, all you need is like one small thing to change, and boom, you got a whole other Baptist denomination. They are identical to this other Baptist denomination, except for that one small thing.
They are
and it's like multiverse literally, multiverse of madness. Multiverse of Christianity they right are, there. Boom.
Yeah, I think, it is so, that's probably what WandaVision was based on. They were like, what's our inspiration for this show?
Baptists.
About what? Baptists. This is it.
So yeah,
that's a very good point.
Yeah. It is. They're. I mean, again, there's probably tons of denominations we can liken to that. But I just think of every time I meet a Baptist, like a lot of times they'll be completely identical to some other group, except that they'll have this like one thing where they're like, oh no, we don't do that.
No,
and we can't.
Yeah,
it's not even that we. It's like no, we can't. We won't.
Yeah.
Like that that's how we started, is because we hit that one thing. We're like, no, we can't do that.
No, we can't. Dancing? Oh, absolutely.
Right. And usually it's not even anything huge. It's usually like some really stupid, practical, like, you know, just small little like, oh no, we just didn't want to do this in the service, but they wouldn't change, and so we had to go over. It's great.
Have you ever noticed that
I love it.
That Christians tend to split over such minor, crazy stuff. It's never about major doctrines.
Right.
It's never about, like, do we believe that Jesus died on the cross? Yes, we believe in that. But, you know, I'm not buying into this whole other minor thing that was never widely accepted by even the early church. And the early church didn't even really talk about it. Early church fathers didn't talk about it. But all of a sudden, no, this
is now
is true. We have elevated this to the top. I always call them, like, here are primary issues and here are secondary issues.
Sure, absolutely.
But they take these really obscure secondary issues and elevate them to a primary issue and say, no, we're going to split over that.
We're going to part ways.
So you agree that Jesus died on the cross, that he is the Savior, the Son of God, all of this stuff, but yeah, you're going to split over this that has been widely debated throughout church history for thousands of years.
If you took the rapture seriously, then you would understand...
And that's one of them. That's one of them. Let's split over that. And it's like, really?
No, but like,
and I mean, that's what we're going to split over.
But people like, they'll split not only over. So I remember having this discussion with people. I remember, you know, learning about this in you know, school. And then, you know, but. And I remember like thinking on some degree, like, surely no. And then you read people, right? Like you meet people and you realize, oh no, totally yes. Right? Like, so it's not even like, oh, just do you believe in the rapture? Like, there are people who narrow it down to like, well, are you a premillennialist?
Yeah.
Right? Or you know, is it pre-post-tribulation, mid-tribulation? Where does it come at? When does the rapture happen? And like, I remember having a discussion, or at least watching a discussion, and trying to participate, and then realize I didn't care. But like, I had a couple of acquaintances who, you know, one was a pre-trib, one was a post-trib, and they weren't, like, they felt like the other person was like, well, it's so sad that you're going to get this close to the kingdom of God and then miss out.
Yeah,
like that was their take. Like,
that's going to condemn somebody.
It's like, that's going to be it. Like, Jesus could be like, oh, you got 99 questions right, but unfortunately you missed the post-trib.
You missed the post-trib.
You know, and it's like, does it matter?
It's
the
like,
answer is apparently to somebody more than anything.
It's like our Arminianism and Calvinism.
Is right.
Like, it's
right.
Like, you know, you get some that are like so adamant about it, and they will just go to town on each other about it. And it's like,
you and I were both in the room when a pastor walked in and said, my name is so-and-so, and I'm a Calvinist. You remember? I'm a highly reformed Calvinist. Like, that's how he introduced himself. We were sitting there in the room together. We had never met this dude before. No one had met this dude before. First time at our meeting, and the guy walks in and goes, I'm so-and-so, and I'm a highly reformed Calvinist. And the whole room is just like, what? Because we were all like, what does it matter? And he's like, well, this is just going to be an issue, because if we don't believe this... Like, you remember that, right?
Yes. And it's like, would you like some pizza?
Right? It was the most awkward thing, because like, he made it so clear that this was his stance. It was immovable. And if you didn't agree with it, you probably weren't going to partner very deeply with him. And he was right.
Yeah. It's true. He was right. You just don't even know what to say. You're just like, okay. You don't even know how to even respond to that stuff. But that's going back to when I said I'm praying that God would do something with this church. And maybe God is like kind of weeding out some of that stuff. And it's like, guys, these are issues that we should not be divided over. Like, can you just stop? Because remember what Jesus said when, you know, the disciples are like, hey, you know, are you bringing in the kingdom? And he's like, it's not for you to know.
So this is why all churches, what denominations really need to do is they need to take a big step back. They need to look at the NBA, the NFL, you know, MLB, various teams. And they need to realize that what they need to have is they need to have a cool ranking system so that every pastor who comes out of seminary or is going into ministry just gets ranked objectively. Their calling, their gifting, their abilities, their skill set.
Draft.
And then just have a flippin' draft.
Just have a draft.
And that way, instead of this whole like, hey, we're only going to pull people from our echo chamber, and that way we can make sure that our denomination only has people who agree with everything. We could just have a flat-out draft. And that way you could have Paula White be the face of Lifeway. And burn Lifeway to the ground, obviously, because that's what would happen. But at least the opportunity would be there. Where right now, that opportunity will never happen.
It would at least be entertaining.
It would at least be entertaining. It would indeed. I'm just saying, a good old-fashioned pastoral draft.
I could just see, like, I used to work at a Lifeway store, and I could just hear somebody come in and say,
we could have pro days.
Do you have that Paula White mixtape?
we could have pro days, man. You could be like, all right, I'm going to hold my pro day. I'm holding my pro day. And you have like 15 churches would send like their search committees to your to your building. You'd be like, all right, today I'm gonna lead a little worship, I'm gonna preach a little bit, I'm gonna call out, maybe do some church discipline, we'll do this, we'll do that. Like we'll cover some bases so y'all can see what I can do.
Yeah.
And and then they can all, you know, walk away and be like, all right, he's
the high
good.
Draft picks are the ones that can go contemporary and tradition.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like the more versatile, that's like a quarterback who can both run and throw. Like you are a dual threat.
You're a dual threat,
and that brings you at least into the first round. I mean, you may not go top five, but you're at least first round pick at that point.
If you can lead worship with your guitar and then turn around and lead a hymn with some organ,
I mean
that's like a number one pick.
Totally. So I'm just saying, this is my new advocacy is to see. I think we should implement some form of draft system. It's at least what I'll be using for all of my selections from now on. You know, forget just pulling people in at hand. I'll just be like, no, draft this.
I'm going to say this. I think this is advice for any listeners out there who are thinking about going into ministry for this draft purpose.
Versatility increases your draft stock.
Yeah. Don't bring the prepackaged communion to your pro day. I mean, you bring that stuff, and that's going to drop your draft status. I mean, you can go from my top pick to like Mr. Irrelevant.
Like, oh no.
Like you bring out
the
You bring out the prepackaged stuff. It's like, hey, let's see you perform some communion, and you bring out the prepackaged.
And like, oh, she missed it.
It's like, oh, Mr. or Mrs. Irrelevant.
Exactly.
Or undrafted free agent.
Undrafted free agent. You are now free to sign with whomever will have you.
And which is, let me just, spoiler alert, that is no one here.
That's right. this is it. It's basic, and if it doesn't become a draft, it's just going to basically become gun for hire. I'm at the point like just...
Now, you want to keep that draft
status high. It's going to be like the Firefly of churches at that point. We're like, hey, we just work for whoever pays us.
You want to keep that draft status high, you bring in some pita bread with a chalice of wine.
That's right. You're like, we're going to do this old school and proper.
Now, then, for me, you dip that bread in that wine and fermentation, I'm out.
And then you bust into the latest Elevation song. People are like, we just don't know how to do it. Mind blown. All right, we got to wrap it up for today. It's been good and fun. Good to talk with y'all, and hope you had a good time listening.
Yes.
Bye.
See ya.